Economic frontliners in the Philippines begin falling in line for their COVID-19 vaccine. Meanwhile, coronavirus cases still on the rise in a number of Philippine provinces. We'll tackle that with ABS-CBN Data Analytics Team Head Edson Guido. We'll also speak with the Health Department's Regional Head in Bicol. Former Defense Chief Gilbert Teodoro expressing his willingness to be the running mate of Sara Duterte Carpio if she decides to seek her father's post. And Filipino teenage golf sensation Yuka Saso makes history as this year's U.S. Women's Open champion. Hi, I'm Camina Constantino. Dateline Philippines begins right now. Thanks for joining us. For those of you watching us on YouTube and on Facebook, nice to have you with us today. The Philippines begins vaccinating economic frontliners against COVID-19. We'll get to that story later. But first, clutch as clutch can be, 19-year-old Yuka Saso makes history by bagging the U.S. Women's Open Golf Championship, becoming the first Filipino woman to win a golf major. Joining us now, our North America Bureau Chief, DJ Manoto, who covered the action from the greens. DJ, good afternoon from Manila.
Hey, good afternoon, Carmina. And, you know, it was such an amazing day for sports, not just for Philippine sports, but for sports in general, because today we were gifted with an incredible comeback win story that any sports fan anywhere in the world can truly appreciate. Yuka Saso came into the day trailing the leader by one stroke. So she was in contention to win it all. But on the second and third hole, she suffered the worst shots she ever had this whole week, hitting two double bogeys and instantly dropping way back behind from the leader at three under par, while the leader was at eight under par. So she was down by five strokes pretty much throughout the next many holes. And then going into the final nine holes, Carmina, she was still down by four strokes. In that respect, in a U.S. major, that's over. You don't catch up from that. That is something that is virtually impossible to catch up, not unless everything falls into your favor, which includes the leader collapsing and you doing well. And that's exactly what Yuka did. Even after she bogeyed hole number 11, she gathered her bearings, parred everything until the 16 and 17, which she had a birdie on both, and then she had that clutch par on the 18th hole to force a tie with another Japanese player. But of course, Yuka is half Japanese, half Filipino, Nasa Hakamoto, and they went into a tie for the lead at 400 par. They went into extra holes. First, it was a two-hole aggregate, and then they went into a sudden death hole. In that second hole aggregate, Carmina, Yuka again was put on the pressure cooker. She had to sink a par putt from 4 feet just to force another tie for the playoff hole. And then in that third playoff hole, on hole number nine, she had her chance, a 6-foot birdie putt to make history. And cool as ice, Yuka Saso, the 19-year-old, 19 years and 11 months, by the way, the youngest player to win this since 2008. She sank it like it was just a practice round. And in jubilation, the many, many Filipinos behind me, because this is right beside Daly City, were jumping for joy and really ecstatic for Yuka as she made history. And this was really, for a lot of people who were in the golfing world and knew what Yuka Saso was all about, this was her destiny. She was destined to be one of the greatest Filipino golfers ever. She's got the backing of many people, many sponsors in the Philippines, and she made history today. She wasn't expecting it herself. She was thinking she was just going to get another good experience, another competitive experience in the U.S. Open, but she won it all, and she's going home with a cool $1 million and that amazing trophy with the names of many past champions who have been some of the greats or the greatest in this game for all time.
Truly, DJ, it was a life-changing game for her. All eyes were on her, as you said, even before today happened. All eyes, including the eyes of her idol, Rory McIlroy. Tell us more about that.
Right, yeah. She spoke about that to us in the press conference afterwards, because she was asked about Rory the last 2 days, how the videos of her have gone viral, and some people have compared her swing to Rory McIlroy, and how it's almost identical. And there's reason for that. She loves his game. She loves his swing. She admitted yesterday in the press conference there would be times she'll be watching YouTube videos of Rory for 12 hours straight. She would fall asleep watching YouTube videos of her swing, and she was just gushing over that. This morning, Rory posted on Instagram a photo of her, and he said, "We'll get the trophy." And she was just overjoyed, and who knows, that could have been the secret sauce, her inspiration to not buckling under the pressure, staying calm under any circumstance, and just finding a way to win.
All right. And the great thing about this is she's only 19 years old. Great things really destined to come from Yuka Sasar. Congratulations to her. And as the Filipinos there, the Filipino community there celebrating with her, of course, you're also celebrating here. So congratulations to her. Thanks a lot. Our North America Bureau Chief there, TJ Manotok, joining us today. Thanks, TJ. Take care and keep safe.
Thanks, Casey.
And the Philippines begins vaccinating economic frontliners, or the A4 priority group. Around 50 individuals were given the COVID-19 vaccine jabs in a ceremonial event in Pasay City. Government says those who physically go to work in Metro Manila and its surrounding areas will be prioritized. Priority may also be given to A4 workers aged 40 and above in situations where vaccine supply is limited.
Dalawa po ang kriteria ng A4. Una, kinakailangan nilang physical mag-report sa trabaho. Pangalawa, kailangan ay deployed o naka-assign sila para gumawa ng fieldwork. Dalawang phases ang distribution at administration po ng mga bakuna para sa A4. Phase 1 po, A4 workers sa NCR plus 8. Phase 2, A4 workers sa labas ng NCR plus 8.
Taiwan gets more help in its battle against the pandemic. And as this report tells us, after receiving a delivery of 1.2 million COVID-19 vaccine doses from Japan, thousands more are arriving from the U.S.
The United States is donating 750,000 vaccines to Taiwan as part of Washington's plan to share shots globally. The donation is a major boost for the island, which is struggling with a spike in domestic cases. The announcement was made by U.S. Senator Tammy Duckworth, who, along with two other senators, arrived in Taiwan from South Korea on Sunday. President Tsai Ing-wen said the vaccines would be a great help with their fight against the virus.
We are very grateful to the Biden administration for extending their hands and adding Taiwan to the first batch of vaccines being shared abroad. We also thank the three senators who are present here for their great efforts in helping to organize this. The vaccines are timely for Taiwan, and your assistance will be etched on our hearts.
Taiwan reported more than 340 new coronavirus cases on Sunday. Only around 3% of its 23.5 million people have been vaccinated, with most getting only the first shot of two needed. Taiwan has complained about China trying to block the island from accessing vaccines internationally. Beijing, which claims the democratically ruled island as its own, denies this. China has offered Taiwan Chinese-made vaccines, but the government in Taipei has repeatedly expressed concern about their safety. On Friday, Japan delivered to Taiwan 1.24 million donated doses of AstraZeneca's coronavirus vaccine.
The number of COVID-19 cases continues to rise across the regions. The ABS-CBN Research Group identified a spike in cases in Calabarzon, Central Luzon, Western Visayas, Northern Mindanao, and in Cagayan Valley. Higher infection rates also seen in Davao, Cagayan de Oro, South Cotabato, and Iloilo. But the health department says the situation remains manageable. Tighter quarantine restrictions have been implemented in these areas. Hospitals there also allotting more critical care beds. The Philippines recorded 7,228 new COVID-19 cases Sunday. This pushes the country's total to 1,269,000. Active infections stand at more than 59,000. The death toll, meanwhile, rose to nearly 22,000. That's after the health department recorded 166 more fatalities. This marks the fifth straight day that COVID deaths hit over 800. Joining us now to help us further understand the country's latest COVID-19 figures is the head of ABS-CBN's data analytics team, Edson Guido. Edson, nice to see you on a Monday. Thanks for joining us today.
Good to see you, Ms. Carmina, and thanks for having me.
Right, let's get to it. Before we go into the provinces, let's talk about the average and daily cases. Where are we at this point when you talk about the average?
So the latest 7-day average when it comes to new cases is more than 6,500. And this is higher compared to the 5,100 that was recorded from May 19 to 25. But it's still lower compared to the peak that we saw in the first half of April when DOH was reporting an average of more than 10,000 cases daily.
But it's still up there, yes. Right? Considering that if we're going to be Manila-centric about this, we are not seeing as high of a number here in the capital. But where are these numbers coming from, Edson?
Right now, we're clearly seeing a shift in the distribution of cases, which we also actually discussed the last time we talked, no, Ms. Casey. Mm-hmm. For NCR, the daily average is just at 1,000 cases per day. So this is now lower compared to the more than 5,000 cases daily in April during its peak. In fact, the share of NCR to total cases is below 20% for 10 straight days now. So if 6,500 is the daily average and only 1,000 are from NCR, that's just 15% for the past week. But if we dive deep into the numbers, if we look at Mindanao, their daily average is now 1,671 cases in the past week, and Visayas is 1,119. So actually, these two are now reporting higher number of cases compared to NCR. In fact, for Mindanao, they now account for 25% of the total cases in the past week, while Visayas is at 17%, and they're both higher than NCR's 15%. And just to provide some context, when cases peaked in NCR in early April, its share to total was at over 50%, while Visayas was just at 5% and Mindanao was at 2%. So the shift in the epicenter now is very evident.
Yeah, and considering that it happened just in the past couple of months, yes. How would you describe the speed by which these numbers rose? Actually, is that alarming to you?
Actually, if we look at the trend, this was also what we observed in NCR before during the surge. And then now we're seeing the same trend in Visayas and in Mindanao. Actually, Mindanao was heavily focused in recent days, but in Visayas, the growth rate in the past week was at 44%. And we're now seeing an increase in all the regions there. So that's region 6, 7, and 8. But for Mindanao, there was a 22% increase in the past week. And we're seeing relatively high growth rates as well in northern Mindanao, Davao region, and Soksarjen. But in terms of specific provinces and highly urbanized cities, for Mindanao, we have to closely monitor Cagayan de Oro City, Bukidnon, Davao City, and South Cotabato. For Visayas, it's Iloilo, Iloilo City, and Bacolod City, and Negros Oriental. So the new cases in these areas, if we look at the trend, they have now reached their new peak, which was also what we saw in NCR before when cases surged. So we're seeing actually the same trend, no? But what's good is that some of these areas, they're now under MECQ. So hopefully we'll be seeing improvements in the coming weeks.
But we also have to take into consideration, and later on we're going to go deeper into that, is that, you know, not all healthcare facilities are created equal across these areas. Some barely are equipped, which we're going to talk about later. But first, I want to talk about the positivity rate, Edson. What's the story in the positivity rate across all the regions?
Actually, if we look at the national level, the positivity rate is no longer decreasing and has actually plateaued, no, at 13%. And if we remember, the WHO recommended level is a positivity rate of 5% or lower for at least 2 weeks. So our current level is still 2 to 3 times higher, which only means that, again, we need to test more, especially in areas where the positivity rates are higher. And if we look at the positivity rates across the different regions, 8 regions have positivity rates above 20%, and 5 of these are in Mindanao and 3 from Luzon. Unfortunately, if we look at all these regions, they're now above the WHO benchmark of 5%. And Region 4B, we discussed this before, Mimaropa, they still have the highest positivity rate. But what's good is it's no longer above 50% like what we discussed before. And the reason is we saw an increase in the number of tests in Mimaropa. And as a result, their positivity rate is now lower. So it's very clear. If you test more, the positivity rate would eventually decline. But for NCR, again, we're seeing a decline. Although it's still at 8.7%, it's still 4 percentage points higher than the recommended level. And again, for context, in the first 2 months of the year, NCR was reporting less than 500 cases and the positivity rate was below 5%. So while things have clearly improved in NCR, our current situation is it's still 2 times higher compared to what we saw from January to February this year. So again, more work needs to be done, even though we're seeing improvements in NCR.
And the improvement that you mentioned is the fact that the numbers are plateauing. But if it stays this way for, let's say, the next few more months, what does that tell us? If we remain on this plane, that doesn't say much about the interventions that are needed at this point. Edson.
Yes, you're right, Ms. Casey. Actually, we need to see a sustained decrease for us to really see the effects of the interventions, because staying at this level is not really good. It's at 1,000 cases. When we reached our peak in April, we started at the base of around of less than 500 cases, and we reached 5,000 cases from that base of 500. So at this level of 1,000 cases, and if we see a surge, it's going to be higher than what we saw before. So for me, we cannot afford another surge at this point, especially now that we're seeing cases in different places outside NCR. We cannot really fight this this virus in many different places, all happening at the same time.
So this cannot be our base.
Yes.
Because this base will clearly dictate how massive the next surge, if at all it happens, will be. What are the consequences, though, on healthcare facilities if this is prolonged? Let's say we remain on this plane for the next couple of months. What's going to be the consequences then?
Well, for NCR right now, actually, this is why it's very important to look beyond the national figures, because, for instance, the ICU bed occupancy at the national level currently, it's showing that the country is in the safe zone because we're at 58%. And NCR is also in the safe zone at 51%. So, but the numbers in NCR is actually driving the national total, because if we see the regional breakdown right there in the screen right now, it tells us that BARM is in critical zone. It's at over 90% occupied. 5 regions are actually at high risk and 4 are at moderate risk. In short, even though at the national level, DOH is reporting that we're in the safe zone, if we dig deeper, less than half of the 17 regions are in the safe zone. So this clearly indicates that there's really an increase in cases outside Metro Manila, where the critical care capacity isn't actually as well equipped as that of NCR. And we know that a surge in these areas can easily overwhelm the health system. And we have to remember, most of these areas were previously under MGCQ, which is the least restrictive quarantine classification. And this goes to show that for areas currently under MGCQ, this is not yet the time for us to be complacent, even though the cases are lower. Because you could see a spike anytime soon if you relax. And the message is really clear at this point. When it comes to COVID, no one is safe unless everyone is.
Yeah. So and we can see this on the number of deaths that are being reported, Edson. It's not going down.
Yes.
Where are these deaths coming from?
Actually, they're now in April when we saw the when we looked at the numbers, they were coming from NCR Region 3 and Region 4A, but now the problem is that the deaths are increasing in different places. And like what I mentioned earlier, when you see an increase in cases across the different regions, it can easily overwhelm the health system, especially in the provinces. So right now we're seeing an increase also in Region 6, in Region 2. So that's Cagayan Valley and then Western Visayas. And just to give you some numbers, Ms. Casey, on May 25, the death toll breached 20,000. And then exactly 1 week after last June 1, it exceeded 21,000. And now, less than a week after, we're close to 22,000. So it's less than, for less than a week, we're seeing an increase of 1,000 new fatalities. And again, these are now coming from different areas. And that's really the problem, no? And in addition, we know that most of these deaths are among senior citizens. And as of latest data, if we look at the vaccine data, only 245,000 senior citizens are fully vaccinated out of nearly 10 million. So we're now more than 3 months into the vaccine rollout, and we have only fully vaccinated 2.5% of our senior citizens. And if we look at the breakdown, there are actually more individuals with comorbidities who are fully vaccinated, even though seniors are higher in the priority list. So this means that we really need to improve our vaccine rollout more so among the senior citizens.
Right. So that should be the next step. Of course, we've already talked about how testing is important. But see, when the surge happened here in Metro Manila, remember that at that time, they refocused all the vaccination energy to the NCR where the epicenter was. Is it now the time, considering all these numbers getting from the we're getting from the provinces, is now the right time, the perfect time to refocus now the vaccination energy onto these provinces that are experiencing these surges and also the deaths among senior citizens, Edson?
Actually, that's an option, Ms. Carmina, but I think the priority now is to increase our vaccine supply first, because right now we haven't really seen much increase in the past few weeks. We had an increase. We had the new supply coming from Sinovac, I think yesterday, but for the past few weeks, our vaccine supply has remained at around 8 million doses. So that has also had an impact on our vaccine rollout. Actually, if you look at our average number of vaccination, the number of daily vaccination pace, we actually slowed down the past few weeks. So I think vaccine supply is also an issue here. So we need to procure more. I think we have 10 million coming this month of June, but it's in the second half of the month. So I think the priority now is to really increase our vaccine supply. And then we also have to increase our vaccine rollout and also address the hesitancy that we're seeing, because again, we started our rollout 3 months ago, and yet some of the numbers, especially among the priority groups, remain very low.
Okay, finally, before we let you go, Edson, as you mentioned a while ago, the death toll breached 21,000 beginning of June. A week later, it exceeded it exceeded the 20,000 mark. You're now saying that we're close to the 22,000 mark. If things go the same, if there's no intervention at this point, what is the next grim milestone that we're looking at here, if the trend continues?
Actually, at this current pace that we're seeing an additional 1,000 deaths for every week. So today it's possible that we'll breach 22,000 at the current pace. So if this pace continues, after 3 weeks, we'll hit 25,000 COVID deaths. So that's the next grim milestone that I'm looking into. So hopefully we have to be decisive in our actions, because we can't really have this kind of number of deaths that we're reporting every day. It's more than 100. Right now, it's more than 100 for the fifth straight day. This can't be normalized for me. 100 deaths per day is just too much. So we need to be more decisive in terms of addressing this current number of deaths, because especially we also discussed the health system earlier across the different areas outside NCR. Some of the regions are now at critical zone and high risk zone. So we need to make sure that we're also looking into those numbers, because if this continues, then we'll have to, we're seeing 25,000 fatalities by the end of the month.
Right. We don't want to see those numbers, right? Hopefully we get to talk to you again, bearing good news this time. Thank you so much, Edson Guido, there, head of the data analytics team. Always a pleasure talking to you. Thanks for your insights. Take care. Keep safe.
Likewise. Thanks again for inviting me, and have a great week ahead, Ms. Casey.
Thank you. Appreciate it. All right. Now, as we told you earlier, the Philippines has begun inoculating economic frontliners. Our correspondent Vivian Guya now joins us for an update on the ceremonial vaccination for the A4 sector. Vivian, what else can you tell us?
Hi, Carmina. The government has kicked off the COVID vaccination of economic frontliners, or the A4 priority group, with a ceremonial vaccination of 50 individuals under that sector. These include some BPO employees, travel guides, tricycle drivers, household helpers, mall personnel, and celebrities. There were also teachers, government workers, fast food chain crew, writers, and journalists from the Malacañang Press Corps. Many of them were selected after signing up or volunteering. The 50 economic frontliners received Sinovac's COVID vaccine. Among those who led the ceremonial vaccination are Vaccine Czar Secretary Carlito Galvez Jr., Health Secretary Francisco Duque III, Trade Secretary Ramon Lopez, and Pasay City Mayor Emmy Rubiano. Lopez says it is a much-needed shot in the arm of economic frontliners and the economy. The government is also considering easing restrictions for fully vaccinated individuals. Lopez says among the policies being studied is whether to allow greater mobility for fully vaccinated seniors 65 years old and above, and the possibility of shortening the quarantine period for fully vaccinated individuals who came from domestic or foreign travel. Lopez notes a lot of investors want to get in the country but are discouraged by the long quarantine period, even for vaccinated individuals. Among those eligible to be part of the A4 priority group are private government, and informal sector workers who are required to be physically present in their workplace or on field. Vaccination of individuals under this sector will be implemented for now in the NCR Plus 8 area or Metro Manila, Bulacan, Pampanga, Cavite, Laguna, Batangas, Rizal, Metro Cebu, and Metro Davao. In case of limited supply of vaccines, priority may be given to eligible workers 40 years old and above. Galvez, meanwhile, says the number of COVID vaccines expected to arrive in the country this month is at over 10 million doses. Officials remind local governments that there should be a separate priority lane for the A1 to A3 group, or health workers, senior citizens, and those with comorbidity. Carmina, back to you.
All right, thanks a lot, Vivian. Take care and you keep safe. All right, we're going to take a quick break now. When we return, we'll focus our attention on the COVID-19 situation in Bicol, the state-line Philippines. Stay with us here on ANC. We are back. You're still with Dateline Philippines. Here's another look at our headlines this noon. Economic frontliners in the Philippines begin falling in line for their COVID-19 vaccine. Meanwhile, coronavirus cases still on the rise in a number of Philippine provinces. Former Defense Chief Gilbert Teodoro expressing his willingness to be the running mate of Sara Duterte Carpio if she decides to seek her father's post. And Filipino teenage golf sensation Yuka Saso makes history as this year's U.S. Women's Open champion. Back with more news. An infectious disease specialist admits government's basis for its face shield mandate is more theoretical than scientific. Dr. Anna Malundo of the Philippine General Hospital says most of the research on face shields suggests they're effective in preventing COVID-19 transmission in high-risk areas like hospitals. But she admits there aren't many studies for its efficacy in the general population. Still, Malundo says it's better to err on the side of caution.
Despite this intervention and all other standard PPE that we are already using, we have experienced a surge that have caused a great burden, especially to our healthcare setting. And so I think at this time, it will be safer to use or recommend face shield while vaccine coverage is still low. And also physical distancing cannot be guaranteed at all times.
Another possible super spreader event, this time in Cebu City. The city government has issued a show cause order to a local bar for violating COVID-19 protocols. Over the weekend, dozens were caught not wearing face masks and disregarding physical distancing at a bar in the village of Kasambagan. Cebu City is currently under the loosest lockdown classification. While gatherings are allowed there, establishments are only permitted to accommodate 50% of the venue's capacity.
We have instructed the business permit section to conduct a thorough investigation on this. And then if found administratively or criminally guilty, one of the more serious consequences is that suspend the permit if there is a need to contact some of those who attended, then we will do it.
The Bicol region also dealing with a surge in COVID-19 cases. Let's check on the situation there now with Dr. Ernie Rivera. He is director of the DOH regional office. Dr. Vera, thank you for joining us. Welcome to the program. Hi, Dr. Ernie. Dr. Ernie?
Hello, magandang hapon po. Good afternoon.
Yes, good afternoon. Magandang hapon po sa inyo. So what's the situation there in Bicol as we speak?
As of today po, we are classified as moderate po. No? Risk classification po based on sa IATF, Bicol region has been classified as a moderate region pertaining to the risk of COVID-19 po.
Ilan po ang kaso natin?
Roughly po ang kaso natin as of cumulative number of cases in Bicol is 13,000 starting po last year, March last year.
And how would you classify the profile of those currently in hospital or afflicted with the disease?
Mostly po ang affected natin is yung asymptomatic.
Okay.
Mild, moderate, and asymptomatic cases po. Mostly half of the cases kang regional profile po is asymptomatic po.
Okay. At yung pong nasa hospital, currently confined, ano po sila?
Confined po is roughly mga 1.5 to 1.6% po. That is the critical and the critical and the severe.
Mm-mm. Are they senior citizens?
Kadakaramihan po, mga senior citizens po yan and those with the comorbid individuals.
Okay. What led to the rise in cases there, Dr. Vera, if you can share it with us?
One is we are now having a community transmission. Kasi po, if you go back to history, marami po kasi dati na pumapasok din sa amin. When early last year po, may mga pumapasok na from high incidence areas. Ano? And right now po, we were able to control that. But lately po, yung mga remnants po nila, they continue to spread the disease. And aside from that po, we also noted na medyo yung contact tracing po natin was not that, what you call this, enhanced ka ng ating mga partners. And aside from that, we have also noted that yung karamihan po ngayon, especially itong buwan na ito, itong taon na ito, para po nag-relax yung ating mga kababayan. Hindi na po nila sinusunod masyado yung minimum health protocols po. Like yung pagsuot ng mask, yung social distancing. So makikita niyo po ngayon dito sa amin, even kasi kanina na po we met with the BIATF and pinakita po namin yung mga pictures na magsasabi po na nag-relax na po yung ating taumbayan. Yan po ang tinatapat namin.
Opo. So ano po ang naging role ng local government dyan para sana naiwasan itong pag-relax ng mga kababayan natin dyan sa Bicol? Because there was, at any given point, there could have been an intervention, right? Kasi hindi naman overnight magre-relax ang ating mga kababayan. Go ahead, doctor.
Yung ano po, if you have to go back po, ano, yung linabas po no, ng IATF na strategy, which is basically what we call the PDI-TR, yung prevent, detect, isolate, and treat. Ito po yung aming pina-implement sa baba with the local government units po. And they are implementing po naman talaga. We have noted that kasi po may lumalabas din sa amin. We usually go down and try to monitor po these areas po. And we found out talaga na lahat ng mga fairness po sa mga LGUs dito sa Bicol, they try talaga hard to implement talaga ho this strategy na binabaan ng ATF. Mm-hmm. But there are talaga naman yung mga kababayan talaga, medyo may katigasan din po. Mm-hmm. Na very sorry to say that, pero even though ako nga po, may isang beses buba ko isang palengke, I called the attention of some people there. Talagang kahit ako nakatingin lang po sa akin, para walang nakita, tinawag.
Dr. Vera?
So, something ho, it goes boils down to some behavior po dito sa atin.
Yeah. Pero, alam niyo po, may kausap din ako ang IATF representative sa Zamboanga City naman. No? I was able to talk to him about a couple of weeks ago. Ang problema nila doon, may mga COVID deniers sa Zamboanga City. Diyan po ba sa Bicol, merong mga hindi naniniwala na totoo ang COVID? Or naniniwala naman sila, pero ayaw lang magsuot ng mga mask at face shields? Ano po bang lagay diyan?
Nakikita ho namin is, usually po, mayroong mask yan. Kumisang nakatago sa bulsa. May mask yan nakababaalan, nakalabas ang ilong. There are times po when nakikipag-usap din ako sa kanila po, sa mga barangays. Sabi po nila, ano lang daw po siya, si COVID, isang parang flu. Flu. Na ibig sabihin, pag ikay natrangkaso, mawawala din yan. So ito po yung medyo may mga pananaw po ganyan pa. But, with that po, ang aming IEC unit po dito sa amin is nagkaroon niya ako kami ng bandilyo dito, a collaborative effort po with the Bureau of Fire Protection. Every day po, ilalabas yung mga bombero nila, yung nagsasalita po sila sa mga barangays on what is COVID, kung ano dapat mga preventive measures.
And has that given you any positive result?
As of now po, hindi pa namin po ini-evaluate dahil ongoing pa po siya. I think mag-aabot na po siya ng 1 month pa lang. So we have to wait para makita po namin yung resulta.
All right. Last week or during the weekend, the Bicol Medical Center announced that it has reached full capacity. Kapag po ganyan ang nangyayari, where are the patients going for COVID treatment?
Usually po, pag ganito, like for BMC po, they are extending their wards. They have been coordination po with the DPWH na to extend po itong kanilang wards. Gaya po nung napag-usapan namin po ng RD ng DPWH is they would be giving us yung containerized bands, container bands po that would be converted into wards. Not only that po, in our Legazpi po, our BRT Tates also is doing it right now po. In preparation din po ito, pagdami talaga ng kaso ng COVID. So kaya as of now po, talaga puno na sila, but they still have some additional wards po sa hospital and that can be converted po into a COVID ward or COVID isolation unit.
Okay, pero iba po yung usapin ng espasyo, ng capacity, no, sa manpower. How is the manpower situation there in critical care capacities or even just in the health facilities there in Bicol? Kulang po ba? Sapat pa? Go ahead.
Sapat po siya, but we are not preparing po for the surge. Like one in our hospitals here po, we have already had a mobile with the uniform personnel po. Na we can yung gumagana nga po ngayon na yung kanilang what they call this, mga nurses, they can now work with the our hospital. And ito din pag gagawin namin doon sa kabilang hospital namin. Na is po na dumadami na ngayon siya, we want that prepared. Kaya right na po, may mga discussions na po kami on how do we utilize the nurses from the uniform personnel.
Okay. But and so far, those are going to be enough to augment.
Yes, kasi for our hospital here in Legazpi, the BRT, the Bicol Regional Training Hospital, ongoing na ginagawa nila.
Okay. All right. What about COVID treatment supplies? Do you have enough?
What do you mean by the drugs?
We can talk about the drugs, we can talk about ventilators, everything that is needed to treat COVID.
As of now po, we have just received, I think, 30 BiPAPs machines. And we have already distributed it to the three of our big hospitals, and we shared it also to some of the NGOs. So as of the ventilation machines, ventilators, po, I think as of now, po, we can still manage. And we are still waiting for the delivery of more ventilators from the DOH Central Office.
Okay. Of course, Dr. Vera, everything would be easier to manage if the vaccination rollout there is sustained. How are we doing with regard to that? Kamusta po ang vaccination rollout natin dyan sa Bicol?
Ongoing po ang ating vaccination dito ngayon sa Bicol. And naka-focus po kami dun sa by categories. We are on A1, A2, and A3 nga right now. Kaya lang po yung pagdating na bakuna, we are hindi po ganun kadami as compared to the other regions, knowing the fact na they have more cases than us. So, but ongoing po aming vaccination procedure po dito sa amin.
And what's the story in terms of vaccine hesitancy? Meron po bang mga, marami pa rin po bang ayaw magpabakuna?
Yung observation po namin mga minsan, minsan dinidelay nila yung vaccine nila dahil doon nga sa issue ng Sinovac, right? Mm-hmm. So medyo ano yan, ibang kwento niyan. But na-overcome po namin yun ng tri-ism campaigns. Ano? But may bagong ano ngayon when Pfizer arrived, ang iba po nag-aantay ng Pfizer na mabakunahan sila ng Pfizer vaccine. So medyo may paniniwala na they want the more the Pfizer vaccine rather than yung aming mga ginagawa ngayon ng vaccines.
Mm-mm. Since the rollout began early part of this year, how many have been vaccinated there in Bicol?
Right now, ma, we have already, I think, vaccinated 100,000 plus.
100,000. Tapos marami pa pong doses na parating. Meron na hubang na ipangako sa inyo ang national government?
Meron pa pong mga ongoing po kasi we have a target of roughly how many? Mga 150 plus thousand. So marami pa pong darating yan ng mga vaccine supplies po.
Okay. Kaya okay, like, we're gonna...
Kasi nga, depende that will depend upon the allocation po from the NHOC.
So far, meron bang nasabi how much of an allocation you'll be receiving in the coming days?
Meron na po. I think we have received how many? Good for 14,000 cases. 14,000 vaccines.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Okay, Dr. Ernie Vera, Regional Director of the DOH Bicol, thank you so much for joining us today. Keep safe po. Take care. And hopefully we'll get to talk again. And this time, maganda ng numerong pag-uusapan natin. Maraming salamat po, Dr. Vera.
Maraming salamat.
Right, in other news, Philippine Vice President Lenny Robredo wants one presidential candidate to represent the entire opposition in next year's elections. But whether or not she will be the one to challenge the Duterte administration's bet is still up in the air. Robredo also revealed she was asked by former Camarines Sur Representative Rolando Andaya Jr. to run for governor instead.
Sinabi ko din kay Ellie sa kanila na hindi pa ako makakapag-decide soon. Mm-hmm. Dahil may mga responsibilities ako sa national. Mm-hmm. May mga responsibilities ako sa national na hindi ko pwedeng talikuran na basta-basta. Makaka-decide lang ako kung mag-run ako for public office pag nag-decide na ako na hindi ako tatakbo para presidente.
Meanwhile, the opposition coalition Isambayan welcomes Vice President Robredo's openness to run for president.
Always naman na welcome yung pagsabi ni VP Lenny na bukas ang option niya at ang gusto niya ay talagang nag-iisa at unified opposition. Pero ang sasabihin ko lang, ang mga nominado po ng Isambayan, wala naman hong priority dyan. Lahat ho yan, pantay-pantay. Wala hong right of first refusal or equity of the incumbent. Sa June 12, magbibigay kami ng aming listahan. We will have this list and then we will start the online selection.
Former Defense Chief Gilbert Teodoro willing to be Davao City Mayor Sara Duterte Carpio's running mate. That's if the president's daughter decides to run for her father's post next year. Teodoro believes Duterte Carpio would make a good president. He also reveals it was former Camarines Sur Representative Rolando Andaya Jr. who initiated his meeting with Duterte Carpio last week.
I gave him a call. And he suddenly said, I think you should meet Mayor Sara. I gave him a call and he was quite happy that I gave him a call. It's part of the consultations that I needed to do because a lot of people were actually asking me to return to public office. And what really happened was this pandemic is the greatest equalizer. I would like to help this country with a unified leadership, go forward and recover as soon as possible.
In business, the Philippine Energy Department warns the Luzon grid may again be placed under red alert this week. The DOE says while power supply is sufficient, reserves in the country's major grid remain thin. It adds red alert conditions may remain until June 10th and that a yellow alert could still be raised in the coming weeks. A red alert means rotational power outages similar to last week or to last week may occur. Sarah Ahmed of the Financial Futures Center says this will keep happening if government does not upgrade to a more resilient power system.
Right now, we're not using modernized technologies. We're still using coal and diesel to regulate our grid. We should be using, wind, solar, and storage. Our regulator is also stuck on this base load mentality. Better that we don't have these large power plants moving one power from one end to the other. Rather, we should have modular distributed power energy systems so that if 100 megawatts, for example, goes offline, no worries. We have another 100 here, there.
In sports, the Los Angeles Clippers are through to the NBA's conference semifinals after knocking out Luka Doncic and the Dallas Mavericks. Clipper stars Kawhi Leonard and Paul George powered their team to a 126-111 Game 7 victory to clinch their first round series. Leonard finished with 28 points and missed out on a triple-double by just one assist. George, on the other hand, had 22 points and 10 assists. The Clippers needed every bucket from their two stars to counter Doncic, who dropped 46 points and 14 assists. The Clippers will next face the top-seeded Utah Jazz in the next round. Over in the East, the Atlanta Hawks upset the top-seeded Philadelphia 76ers 128-124 in the opener of their second-round series. Atlanta started hot and led by as many as 26 points. The Sixers rallied in the second half and got the deficit down to 3 with about a minute left. But Atlanta's Bogdanovic knocked down a clutch three to seal the victory. Trae Young led the Hawks with 35 points. MVP contender Joel Embiid led the Sixers with 39 markers. And that'll do it for today. Thank you for joining us. I'm Carmina Constantino. If you want to revisit today's episode, Dateline Philippines podcast is on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Play back this newscast too on ANC's YouTube channel and on ANC 24/7 on Facebook. Keep safe. Keep it here on ANC.